From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. Before I get into some of the details that we'll be covering today, let me first of all send a huge sense of sympathy and prayers to those in Barrow County, Georgia, where yet again we've had a mass shooting in a high school, the Appalachian High School in Barrow County. I would encourage each of you to join us in keeping those families, the student body, and especially the families of those who lost ones in your prayers today. Unbelievable that we continue dealing with these type of tragedies. It is a reflection of the evil that has come into our culture. All right, coming up on today's program. Yesterday, the U.S. Justice Department announced the unsealing of terrorism, murder conspiracy, and sanctions evasion charges against six senior leaders of Hamas.
Today, the Justice Department unsealed charges against Yahya Sinwar and other senior leaders of Hamas for financing and directing a decades-long campaign to murder American citizens and endanger the security of the United States.
Well, that was U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. And certainly the recognition of terrorist atrocities perpetrated by Hamas is welcome. And it also certainly stands in contrast to the statement made over the weekend by President Biden, who was at that time more critical of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu than he was of the ones who were behind the six hostage murders over the weekend.
Thinking about the moments that those boys and girls were waiting and actually knew that they're going to execute them. Those are savages. They are the ones to be blamed. And we expect our ally, the U.S., to say it very clearly. Hamas is to be blamed and for the fact we don't have a deal today.
Well, that was Israel's ambassador to the U.N., Danny Dannon, yesterday on Fox and Friends. I'll be joined in just a moment by Congressman Scott Perry to get his thoughts on the latest. I'll also get his insights on the upcoming battle over government funding, which Republicans hope will include their election integrity bill. And speaking of election integrity, I'll be joined later in the program by Ken Blackwell to talk about what Republican governors and lawmakers can do ahead of Election Day. And trust me, it's already underway this week in some states. Also on today's program, we'll take a dive into a Supreme Court decision yesterday that denied an emergency request from Oklahoma for an injunction to reinstate over $4 million in Title X funds. And all this is happening while the state's challenge to those funds are taking place, working their way through the lower courts. And there is much, much more than meets the eye to this important case. And so we'll be talking about that a little later on. And then finally, the Kamala Harris bus tour of death, or she describes it as the bus tour of reproductive freedom. But it kicked off yesterday in Florida, of all places, where voters will be deciding on the fate of an amendment proposal that will enshrine an absolute right to abortion up to birth in Florida's state constitution.
In November, we must choose a future where women's rights are respected and reproductive freedom is guaranteed. And that is why in the state of Florida, we are going to show the rest of the country who we are here. We will pass Amendment 4 and make sure to enshrine reproductive freedom into our rights.
Well, that was former Congresswoman Debbie McCarthy Powell speaking at yesterday's event. And while we certainly should not, in fact, we are not at all surprised that the Democrats are talking it up on abortion this election season, the question is, are they also hoping that Americans won't be aware of the racist roots that lie beneath the abortion industry? This is something you don't want to miss, and we'll be covering the details of that later on in the program. So we've got a lot coming your way. Our website, as always, TonyPerkins.com. tons of information there for you, including a link to Family Research Council's 2024 election survey. This is a survey we're asking you to join so that we can hear what is most important to you, and your voice can make a difference as we enter into this election cycle. So to stand for truth, to stand for faith, to stand for family, to stand for freedom, please let us know what's important to you going into this election cycle. You can participate in the survey simply by texting the word election to 67742. That's election to 67742. All right, let's jump into today's program. The killing of six hostages in Gaza over the weekend certainly marked the beginning of a new chapter in the Israel-Hamas war. And Hamas is now threatening to execute more hostages if Israel attempts further rescues. And on top of all that, there's much less optimism, we can put it that way, for any kind of hostage deal now. Senior government officials in Washington reportedly expressing despair and frustration about the state of the talks. The question is, are we now at a critical juncture? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Scott Perry. He serves on four House committees, including the extremely important Intelligence Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 10th Congressional District of the great state of Pennsylvania. Congressman Perry, always great to see you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Jody, it's good to see you, my friend. And I got to just tell you, I'm appalled. I know you are as well at the position of the Biden administration. These hostages have been held for 11 months and then to be probably tormented and tortured throughout that period of time, and then to be shot in the back of the head and executed right now, and that news to come out to the world, of course, that's horrific enough. But then to have the Biden administration, the Biden-Harris administration, come out and call for Israel to engage and lead in a ceasefire. Remember, Israel was attacked by Hamas. They have been continually attacked by Hamas. There can be a ceasefire if Hamas quits attacking Israel and killing Israel's citizens. That's when there can be a ceasefire. As usual, the Biden administration pandering to the pro-Hamas anti-Semitic crowd within their party in places like Michigan and Wisconsin, trying to split hairs here. Jody, you and I both know there is good and there is evil, and you can't split hairs in this kind of thing. It's to me, it's embarrassing and disappointing when the ambassador from Israel has to remind the United States of America that they're a friend of Israel. That is unacceptable to me.
Yeah, it's stunning from every angle that you look at this. I mean, President Biden is saying at least the other day over the weekend that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not doing enough. And yet we all know who the bad guys are in this. Why is it that you believe that Israel is receiving the lion's share of international criticism when we all know who really the bad guys are here?
Well, the Israelis and, of course, the Jews in particular have always been at the end of criticism around the globe. That's probably never going to change for whatever reason the anti-Semites feel that that's appropriate. But I think, unfortunately, the United States of America allows that to go on by playing into that, by being weak on our support for Israel, even if rhetorically. I mean, saying that the prime minister is not doing enough. All he's doing is defending his people and defending his country. Meanwhile, every offer that's been put on the table has come from Israel and been rejected by Hamas. What more? The only thing that's more left to do is to just hand over the country of Israel and its citizens to the terrorists and the murderers. I suspect that's the only thing that's left to make Joe Biden and these international anti-Semites happy.
So let me ask you this, Congressman Perry. Yesterday, I'm sure you saw the Justice Department announced the unsealing of terrorism, murder conspiracies, sanctions, invasion charges against some leaders of Hamas. How do you respond to all of that? Is this perhaps a change of policy, the beginning of a change of policy, or is this just rhetoric coming from the White House?
Well, Jody, thanks for asking the question. I think it's a combination of rhetoric and the inability to escape reality, right? Of course, Hamas is attacking Jews in Israel on a regular basis, horrifically, but this also includes American citizens. And though the campuses are now rife with pro-Hamas supporters and protest, the Justice Department, of which just turns a blind eye, they cannot any longer turn a blind eye to Hamas's operation within the United States and the threats to the United States proper. So I think they just they had to do it. They had no choice. And unfortunately, I hope it's in time that before some tragedy at the hands of Hamas has occurred in the United States of America.
Well, I certainly go along with you on that. I wish I could talk all day with you on this, Congressman, but if I can, let's switch gears. Yeah. The clock is ticking away. Congress comes back next week. There's only 3 weeks before a potential government shutdown is going to occur. Speaker Johnson this morning hosted a call with all you GOP lawmakers to go over the plan. I know you can't talk about that conversation in detail, but whatever you can say, what can you tell us about the battle that's ahead?
Well, the battle ahead is this. As you know, Jody, we're going to run out of funding. We don't have a partner in the Senate with Chuck Schumer there. They have passed zero appropriations bills. So and they haven't even agreed on a budget, you know, what we call a top line number, how much we're going to spend for the year. They can't even agree on that. So knowing that, there's not going to be an agreement. So we're going to be left with a couple options, a continuing resolution, which keeps spending the same amount of money, same policy, until the deal's worked out, or an omnibus, which would be terrible, written in Chuck Schumer's office by his staff, spending wildly, terrible policy. What the speaker has discussed with us is a 6 months continuing resolution. You and I both don't love that, but that gets us into the Trump administration, God willing, if he were to prevail. But included with that would be attaching to that the SAVE Act, which requires states then to verify citizenship of every one of their voters. And that's something that is sorely needed. Of course, it's already illegal for people that are here illegally to vote. But that's not to say it doesn't happen, Jody, because no one's enforcing it. Think about speed limit laws in your state with no police there to ever enforce them. And so this would require states to actually enforce the law. We see it as a potential game changer. We just want our elections to be fair, but determined by American citizens. And the fact that the Democrats oppose that should tell you everything you need to know. But I suspect you're going to see a CR with the SAVE Act coming up in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
All right, less than a minute left on that topic. It's an uphill battle. Schumer's already said dead on arrival.
Yeah, of course.
Do the Republicans have the wherewithal, the will to see this through and to fight for it?
Well, I'm sure going to fight for it. It's the only chance we have. It's either that or a CR with nothing on it, no wins for the Republicans and the American people, or an omnibus, which is even worse. And though Chuck Schumer might say it's dead on arrival, when that's what the House sends him and the House passes that, he's going to have no choice to either accept that or he will be responsible for shutting down the government.
Yeah, and that would be fun to watch how he handles that. Thank you, Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania. Always great to have you on the program. Thanks for your leadership on so many fronts. Good to have you
today. Thank you. Thank you, Jody, and thank you for the FRC. God bless you.
Thank you. All right, friends, coming up on the other side of the break, FRC Action Special Advisor for Election Integrity, Ken Blackwell, is going to be joining me to talk about why states should pass proof of citizenship laws in order to register to vote. Just common sense. But I can assure you, you don't want to miss what's coming up with Ken Blackwell. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Jody Heiss. An honor to be filling in today for Tony. All right. Late last month, the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in on an election integrity issue for the first time in the run-up to this presidential election. It was a 5-4 court decision. The justices reinstated a provision in Arizona's election law that requires residents to prove U.S. citizenship when registering to vote using the state registration form. And my next guest says that such election integrity measures should be passed all across the country headed up to Election Day. Joining me now to discuss this is former Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell. I don't know of anyone more equipped to discuss this than he is. He's a senior fellow for human rights and constitutional government at the Family Research Council, as well as FRC Action's Special Election Integrity Advisor. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always an honor to have you.
Jody, it's good to be with you, sir.
Okay, so for those who are watching, listening right now, who may not be familiar with the case in Arizona, give us a little background.
Well, in 2004, Arizona passed legislation requiring citizenship for folks in Arizona to register to vote. It got complicated in 2013 when it was decided that if someone came in and asked for a federal form to register to vote, they did not have to show proof of citizenship. It grew out of a 2013 case in Arizona dealing with one of the Native American groups there. As a consequence, we now have a situation where on a 5-4 decision, as you mentioned, the Supreme Court says the state can go back and require proof of citizenship to register to vote. The caveat there is that if someone comes in and says, I want the federal form, they can get the federal form and fill it out. And what that means is that you have a situation where if the state hasn't divided up their and printed off two sets of ballots, one for the feds and one for the fed and state together, you have a situation where they still have to hand over that ballot to that citizen that hasn't proved, or excuse me, to that registrant that hasn't proved that he or she is a citizen. So it's convoluted. But here's what we know, Jody. You know, there are citizenship rights and there are citizenship duties. As long as the duty is not convoluted or so complex and intrusive that it becomes a burden, asking for a proof of citizenship should not bother anyone. That's the only way that we can protect the integrity of citizenship and the integrity of our elections. This is a situation that cries out for more people to get involved and engage and become demanding that we have that sort of integrity and protection of citizenship and our national sovereignty. Jody, it goes without saying, anybody who is aware of what is happening in communities like Aurora, Colorado, where gangs of hoodlums are taking over housing complexes, or if you turn to what's happening in New York, and you have the police department saying there that 2 out of every 3 people that they've arrested over the last 3 or 4 days have in fact not been citizens, or they've been non-citizens. That's a real bit of evidence that we're suffering with an open border on the South. We're suffering from an invasion.
Well, we are, and it's tragic and inexcusable, unacceptable on every front, from the crime perspective, the drug perspective, the human trafficking. But just the fact that these people are coming here illegally, and then many, many, many of them, we don't know how many, but potentially millions of them can be registered to vote. This is absolutely unacceptable. So what needs to happen? Ken, our time's slipping away here. We have states that do not allow special sessions very quickly. We're just weeks away, certainly no more than a couple of months away from the election. What can states do at this stage in the game to try to secure election integrity?
Well, I think what citizens can do in all of our states is demand election integrity. And by actually shining some spotlight on this challenge, I think that we can pull the curtain down on this illegal action. Here's the reality. Yeah, people can claim that doesn't happen often, but when you have local elections decided by 1 or 2 votes, when you have, you know, elections at the federal level for president in 3 states, only separated by, you know, less than 100,000 votes, every vote counts. And so protecting the integrity of the system by making sure that there's no illegal vote that cancels out a legal ballot is prudent. We cannot sit on the sidelines. We, in fact, can't give somebody else the responsibility. Each citizen of the United States has to demand this integrity, has to demand this sort of transparency, have to get involved, and we must continue to make sure that we have as many people as observers and workers at the polling places as all possible at the precinct level. We must.
Absolutely. All right, we got less than a minute, Ken. When you say citizens have to step up, what does that look like? What does a citizen do if they see something that doesn't look right?
Well, one, when I say citizens must do something, that means that we should not have a polling place in America that is not covered by 2 sets of eyes, bipartisan sets of eyes, so that we have transparency. So make sure you go to your local party, go to your local county office and ask, how can you become involved as a worker or observer? We, in fact, cannot let darkness prevail in this election.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ken Blackwell, FRC Action Special Advisor for Election Integrity. Always great to have you. Thanks for your insight. All right, friends, coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court has decided, at least for now, to allow the Biden-Harris administration the right to deny the state of Oklahoma health care funds over a beloved member of the left's unholy trinity, abortion. Well, we'll discuss all of this right after the break, so stay tuned.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am your host, Jody Heiss, and so delighted to have you with us today. All right, this next topic can sound pretty complicated, but I want you to hang in here because this is really an important issue. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court denied an emergency request from Oklahoma for an injunction to reinstate over $4 million in Title X funds while that whole case now is going to start making its way through the lower courts. Again, this case may seem a little dry, but the implications here are extremely serious, and we want to make sure that you're up to speed on it all. And joining me now to break all this down is Steve Aden, Americans United for Life's Chief Legal Officer and General Counsel. Steve, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Thank you, Congressman. It's great to be with you.
Okay, so first of all, maybe a little historical perspective. How did this dispute between Oklahoma and the Biden administration, the HHS in particular, how did all this get started?
Well, Congressman, as you know, the federal government funds family planning programs in the states, has since about 1970. Oklahoma takes a good-sized chunk of that for their family planning programs, principally for poor folks. And the Biden administration, as part of their nonstop attempt to reimpose a federal right to abortion that the Supreme Court said no longer existed in the Dobbs case when it overturned Roe versus Wade, it told the states, if you want federal family planning money under Title X, you're going to have to agree to refer women in Title X programs for abortions. And a lot of states protect life from conception, like Oklahoma, like Tennessee, which had 7 million yanked by the Biden administration. And they said, no, thanks. We're not going to refer for abortion. It's illegal in our state. Well, HHS didn't like that. They yanked the 4 million from Oklahoma for that, the 7 million from Tennessee. And they're going around the country trying to force states to kowtow to the Biden administration's Medicaid officials and refer women for abortion when, in fact, it's illegal in a lot of states.
Yeah, so that poses a problem. This looks to me, and please, please, Steve, tell me if I'm wrong, but I look at this case and it appears to me as another example of the federal government being weaponized to force states that are pro-life to forsake their state laws and bow, as you say, and embrace, in fact, the abortion agenda of the federal government, at least of this Democratic Party. Is that a stretch, or is that in actuality what's happening here?
Well, it's not a stretch at all, Congressman, because if the federal government were doing its job under the Constitution, it would enforce and administer a whole host of pro-life laws that Congress has passed over the years, like the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits funding of tax dollars for elective abortions and other things. Instead, they've twisted things around and they've said, well, we're going to force Department of Defense healthcare facilities to provide abortions. We're going to provide for abortions in many other ways. We're going to unleash the power of HHS and the Attorney General to try to force pro-life states to provide for and fund elective abortions. So this is just one example of that, and they're doing it in a number of different ways. This attempted forced referral for abortion is illegal for a couple of reasons. Under federal law as it stands, the Weldon Amendment says that the federal government cannot force states or state health care providers to refer for abortion. It's a conscience provision, but like a lot of provisions, the Biden administration has ignored that one and gone on anyway. But we hope the Supreme Court will clear this up sooner or later.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, because here's another big question that comes to me. A lot of people, a lot of folks these days, and a lot of confusion with this, but many are saying that abortion rights at life now is a state issue. But what we're seeing in this is a federal government still, right now, today, forcing states that have pro-life laws to forsake those laws. So this would say to me that neither now nor at some point in the future, at the end of the day, is the battle for life ultimately and solely a state issue. There is a role of the federal government.
Oh, absolutely. There are a host of federal laws that protect life, and the administration has to commit to enforcing them instead of trying to circumvent them. I'll give you another example. The Supreme Court just heard a case involving the Biden administration's attempt to force all hospital emergency rooms to do abortions. There's a federal law, EMTALA, which said you can't turn women away or patients away if they're in emergency circumstances from an emergency room. It's a good law. And they, again, have twisted that to say, well, part of healthcare is abortions. So if a woman needs an abortion, she comes to the emergency room, you got to give her one. Well, that's not what the law was meant to do. And yet they have twisted it in a really diabolical way and tried to force hospitals to do that. That's just one of many things they're doing like that.
So this remains a battle that has to be fought diligently on all fronts, the state level as well as the federal level, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Americans United for Life is fighting the fight in Congress and all 50 states. We're looking forward to the day when there's a constitutional amendment protecting all life, even if that's a generational goal. It took 50 years almost to overturn Roe versus Wade. And if that's how long it takes to enshrine protections for all human life in America, we will do that.
Steve Aden, Americans United for Life, thank you so much for breaking this down for. It's an extremely important case. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir.
All right, friends, next, the Kamala Harris bus tour of death, what she calls reproductive freedom, is in full swing. But do Americans know that all of this really is racist in its roots, the abortion industry? Find out more about it on the other side of the break. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. And just by way of reminder, our powerful Pray, Vote, Stand Summit is coming up October 3rd through the 6th in Washington, D.C. We would absolutely love for you to come join us. To get more information or to register today, you can go to PrayVoteStand.org. PrayVoteStand.org. I encourage you to do that right away. I also, again, one more time, want to encourage you to join FRC Council's 2024 election survey. This is going to let your voice be heard as we enter into this election cycle. What is important to our nation? What's important to Christians? Who else is going to tell us but Christians? So we encourage you to let us know. You can join the survey by texting the word election to 67742. All right. Speaking of elections, the Harris-Waltz campaign kicked off what they are calling the Onboard the Reproductive Freedom bus tour. Most of us really know that it's a bus tour of death, as they're just promoting abortion. But they started the tour yesterday in Florida, but they're hoping to make 50 stops all across the nation. And that, in addition to the new Democrat ads that are coming out in New York, California, Nevada, they are making it abundantly clear, if it were not already abundantly clear, that the issue of abortion will be the spotlight for them as we head towards November. At the same time, Democrats are accusing Republicans of being extremists. Republicans have the dangerous agenda. That, at least according to the Democrats. But as we've been pointing out, it's the Democrats who are extreme. They literally are wanting taxpayer-funded abortion on demand for any reason up until birth in all 50 states. Well, my next guest says that abortion advocacy is not only extreme, it's also racist. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Pastor John Amanchukwu. He is one of the pastors at the Upper Room Church of God in Christ in Raleigh, North Carolina, a powerful speaker. He and I were at an event together at Sea Island, Georgia, a couple of months ago. my first opportunity to hear him in person, and it was phenomenal. He's also the author of the book Erased, Uncovering the Lies of Critical Race Theory and Abortion. Pastor John, welcome to Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. It's good to see you again.
It is likewise. Great to see you. All right, listen, before we jump into the racism aspect of all of this, which you're nobody is able to unfold that like you. But before we get into that aspect of it, what's your take on the Walz Harris bus tour that I just referenced? Is, you know, Democrats are coming out with what I prefer to call a bus tour of death.
Truly, it is to have that set up at the DNC and now transversing the country really says something about the Democrat Party that me and you already know, that it's a party of death. Margaret Sanger wanted to exterminate the Negro population. There's a letter that she wrote to Dr. Clarence C.J. Gamble. And in that letter, she said she did not want the word to get out that she wanted to exterminate the Negro population, and that she would use the Black charismatic preacher to convince other Blacks to abort their babies. What we're seeing right now with the Harris and Walz campaign, they're only furthering the plan and the strategy of Margaret Sanger. If you are pro-abortion, you're also pro-racism. And it's time for Americans to really understand what that truly says about a political party who seeks to do that. Margaret Sanger was the darling of the KKK. They brought her into their functions and allowed her to speak on multiple occasions. And today, Tim Walz and Kamala Harris, a fake Black woman, wants to say that they support them, and Blacks are supposed to go along with that for the sake of identity politics, because I'm a Black man, I should vote for someone who looks like me, regardless of the fact that they want to kill as many Black babies as possible. 20 million Black babies are missing since the inception of Roe v. Wade, and we are supposed to support the Democrat Party? For any Christian who casts the vote for the Democrat Party, they're not doing that based upon the Bible. They're doing that based upon secular humanism and postmodernism and a new Christ and a new Bible and a new doctrine of the faith, not based upon Christian principles.
So how did this happen, Pastor? How does someone like Margaret Sanger come into the picture like she did with the motive that you just described she had to eliminate the Negro race, as you described it? How does she do that? And then at the same time, use Black pastors to push that message forward? It just seems so puzzling to me to figure out how all this came together.
I have to say it. Bear with me. White liberals have always sought to destroy Blacks and to keep us bound in slavery. You know, it was the Democrat Party that did not want to end slavery. It was the Democrat Party that drafted the Jim Crow laws. It was the Democrat Party that voted against the Civil Rights Act. With strong support from the Democrat Party, they pushed the ideologies of Roe versus Wade. With the strong support of the Democrat Party, Planned Parenthood receives nearly $500 to $600 million a year in federal funding. And now with the support of the Democrat Party, a Black woman, supposedly, Kamala Harris, we're being told to support the Democrat Party, a party that wants to kill babies all the way up to 9 months. Now, one has to ask yourself, why are so many Blacks gullible? Why are they supporting a political party that seeks to destroy them? Well, it's very complicated, but you have to go back to the time frame of Lyndon B. Johnson. Lyndon B. Johnson came up with a great society plan. He found a creative way to remove the Black man from the home and to replace him with a $300 to $400 check. He created welfare states and incentivized the single-parent family. And from there, it broke the back of the black community as it relates to our marriage rates. From the 1890s all the way up to the 1950s, the black marriage rate rivaled that of whites. But when Lyndon B. Johnson came along with his Great Society plan, he obliterated the black community. Kamala Harris can care less about black Americans. She solely cares about criminal illegal aliens. So the criminal illegal aliens get jobs, but blacks get welfare. The criminal illegal aliens are told to come into our country and we'll give your children asylum. Blacks are being told, and Americans across the board are being told, to abort your baby. And now we have buses going around the country in the name of protecting the Democrat democracy. Someone has to die. Some baby must have their limbs ripped from their body. Some baby must have their skull crushed. This is insane and barbaric. We don't want to support a political party, nor should we, that seeks to do these things. And if they can't kill the baby in the womb, I know from a firsthand account that they want to indoctrinate children in the public school system. So if you can't kill them in the womb, turn them into transgenders in the classroom. Push gender theory and queer theory upon them. Confuse them. And we know that God is not the author of confusion. We know that Satan is. Satan is the author of confusion. He's also the deceiver of the brethren. And so the Democrat Party offers nothing to America. But so many people have been duped and hoodwinked. And this is why now more than ever, the church must use her voice and speak up. Pastors who are on the fence and playing these soft, weak games of, you know, we can't talk about politics, or, you know, the pastor must stay in his particular role, and, you know, the Bible is not political. All of these lies, you know, there are many preachers today who, instead of telling their congregation to vote biblical values, they will much rather say nothing and be liberal and progressive. The Bible is political.
Absolutely. It addresses all these issues that you're speaking of. Why do you think, Pastor John, that there seems to be a great willingness to speak out against deadly encounters with police, which there should be? I'm not trying to sweep that under the rug. Where it's unjust, it's unjust.
Sure.
But there seems to be a much greater willingness to speak out against that, but not against 20 million black babies that have been killed. Why is that?
Well, you know, when you are a race baiter, I'm talking about men like Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, you know, it pays the bills to be a race hustler and to divide people through Marxist tactics, you know. And within Marxism, you must know how it works. There must be chaos. There must be division. There must be blacks versus white, the rich versus the poor, the patriarchy versus the matriarchy, the LGBTQIA plus community versus those who are straight. Marxism thrives through division. But there are individuals out there, you're right, who would much rather talk about the white cop who kills a person, regardless of what they're doing or not, or whether or not it was deserved. You know, they would much rather talk about that than the 20 million black babies that have been killed in this country. It's intentional. You know, they sweep these things under the rug because it doesn't fit the narrative. And the moment some isolated incident shows up, they say, aha, we got you now. America is a racist nation, and it's time to burn down neighborhoods and communities. And so these things are strategies. They are strategies. And listen, the left is waiting for the next opportunity for that to take place so that they can rip our country apart. I say to everyone out there that we need to listen with the mind of Christ, right? We must use the fruit of the Spirit to listen, to understand rightly what is going on and be discerning, because so many today are being tripped up off of trivial things as a means of pulling someone to their political party.
Absolutely. All right, so if I can, Pastor, let me switch gears with you just a little bit. Same general topic, but a different angle of it. There's, I guess, several areas, but another glaring one where Democrats claim to be backing the Black community, but they're not. And that's when it comes to wages, and particularly lower wages. How has the Biden-Harris administration, particularly the border policy, impacted lower wage earners?
It has impacted it substantially. You know, keep in mind, over 10 plus million criminal illegal aliens have come into our country. Now, I don't call them newcomers or asylum seekers. Many of these individuals are military age, and oftentimes they find a way into the country and they leave their children and their families behind. And so, yes, they have taken jobs from Blacks. This is true. You know, America only has but so many resources. You know, and when you come into economically disadvantaged communities and these individuals are giving thousands of dollars to purchase homes and to have different handouts from the federal government, these things will impact other economically disadvantaged people in those communities. But I think there is a strategy here. You know, how does the Democrat Party find a new Negro? Right. How do they find a new voting block? Well, it's called cheap votes. And that's why the leftists don't want to shut the border, because they have the opportunity to bring in a mass of people who will support their political party. And so that's what's taking place. And yes, it has hurt Black Americans. And keep in mind, Black Americans are aware now. You know, in 2020, President Trump received nearly 9% of the Black vote. In 2024, he's trending around 24%. That is astronomical.
That's huge. Yeah,
that's major.
It is.
And I'm doing everything within my power to make sure that we move that trend in the right direction, not simply and solely for the sake of President Trump, but for the fact that we don't want to support a political party that wants to abort children.
All right, let's end there. We've only got about 60 seconds left here. What do you say to Black pastors, Black leaders, Black voters right now as we enter into this election cycle? 60 seconds.
Number one, the blood will be on your hands if you fail to preach the whole counsel of the Word of God. If you fail to point out the error of these current administrations, God is going to judge you for that. You know, every man shall stand before the judgment seat of Christ to give an answer of what he's done in his body. And whether it be good or bad, the Apostle Paul says, we persuade men. You know, we persuade men knowing that this danger is coming. And so it's imperative now more than ever that pastors tell their congregations to vote biblical values, not based upon personalities, but biblical values. And no, Jesus is not on the ballot, but he's going to hold us accountable of how we vote.
Absolutely, he will. Pastor John Amenchukwu, always great to see you. Thank you so much for your leadership on this. And may God bless your voice to just be amplified across this country. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you kindly. God bless you.
God bless you. All right, friends, thank you so much. This wraps up yet another edition of Here at Washington Watch. Hope you have a fantastic remainder of your evening. We'll see you next time right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.